Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we're going to tell you how local firefighters are preparing for what could be the worst wildfire season in years. Then, we'll have an announcement from the San Diego Sheriffs about a new high-low signal being installed in all patrol vehicles to warn the public about evacuations during wildfires and other emergencies. Another inmate has died in sheriff's custody, this time a homeless woman at Las Colinas Detention Facility in Santee, and we'll have details. From California News Service, hear how the efforts of a new organization called Act Against Hate are rolling out. A Santee church is organizing a pride walk coming up in June with a bipartisan slate of speakers, including Santee's mayor. How might California's proposed budget impact education funding? We'll have a report today from California News Service. On People Power, hear about a local couple being honored as women in aviation pioneers, and one of them is a man. Our newsmaker interview is with Lillian Serrano, director of the Southern Border Communities Coalition. They filed a federal complaint this week over extreme mistreatment of asylum seekers in Jacumba Hot Springs, a high desert town in San Diego's East County, where migrants were detained for days with no food, shade, blankets, or access to adequate water. East County Magazine first broke this shocking story of abusive treatment of these migrants 2 days before the federal complaint was filed. Please stay tuned to learn more about this deeply troubling situation, including clear violations of both national and international law by Border Patrol agents. Then on Destination East County, hear about all the festivals and events coming up across our inland region. On Crime Beat, the identities of two men fatally shot at an Airbnb in East County have been released. Today, we'll also have some rattlesnake safety tips and campfire safety information as we enter outdoor recreational season. Plus, we'll have an update on the hepatitis A outbreak in San Diego. And finally, we want to invite all of you to the grand opening of KNSJ's new studio this Saturday, May 20th at 4161 Home Avenue from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. We'll have live broadcasts, listener calls, and refreshments as we celebrate the new broadcast studio for community education, information, and participation. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. San Diego County firefighters are gearing up for what is forecast to be one of the worst fire seasons on record after all the heavy winter rains. The 20th annual multi-agency wildland preparedness exercise took place in early May to provide thousands of local firefighters and fire officers with crucial real-world training in wildland firefighting. Hosted by the Barona Fire Department on the Barona Reservation and sponsored by San Diego Gas and Electric, this annual drill is an important tool for county fire departments, law enforcement, animal services, and utility companies to work together on a large-scale mock incident to protect lives and property, carefully planned to mimic a real wildland fire response. The crews are dispatched to rugged, vegetation-filled canyons, fields, and urban interface areas where they coordinate an initial attack and radio for any other resources they require. As sheriff's deputies knock on doors and warn residents of fast-moving fire, crews are stretching lines and putting water on the pre-marked fire areas. Attention to detail adds to the reality of this immersive training. Combative residents, burned firefighters, unattended children, and pets are just a few of the curveballs thrown at the crews through the three-day training as command skills of fire service leaders are put to the test. During the drill, strike teams, air support, bulldozers, medic units, and law enforcement were all just a radio call away. Firefighting helicopters from San Diego Sheriff's Department, San Diego City Fire, and SDG&E were also on hand to make water drops when requested. Crews from over 20 fire departments located in San Diego County cut brush, stretched hose lines, protected structures, and worked together as a unified firefighting force. Building camaraderie and learning to work with departments who share neighboring districts is a big part of this drill, and that's paramount to ensuring solid teamwork when the call comes in. East County Magazine dispatched our own wildfire reporter, Josh Stotler, who has firefighting experience, to cover this unique multi-agency training drill. He concludes, here in San Diego County, the question of when the next campaign fire will be isn't if, but when. And San Diego County residents can rest assured that the trained professionals who protect their lives and property in a wildfire stand capably at the ready. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Patrol cars in San Diego County are now equipped with a high-low. This unique sound is different from sirens you hear when deputies and officers respond to emergency calls. High-low quickly alerts entire neighborhoods that they are in immediate danger. This warning system will be used during wildfires, flash floods, earthquakes, and other natural disasters, or critical incidents requiring the evacuation of a particular area. When you hear this sound, you must evacuate immediately. To receive evacuation notifications during an emergency, register your cell phone with Alert San Diego and Accessible Alert San Diego at alertsd.org. Follow your local law enforcement and fire agency on social media or stay up to date by watching the news. Remember, when you hear the high-low, it is time to go.
A homeless woman arrested for vandalism has died in custody at the Las Colinas Detention Facility in Santee. According to the Sheriff's Department, during a well-being check, a lieutenant noticed that 63-year-old Patricia Adamson was not caring for herself. Deputies and a doctor helped her to the shower with a wheelchair, but she began showing signs of medical distress. Despite life-saving measures administered by jail personnel and paramedics, Adamson died at the scene. The Sheriff's Department has come under criticism during former Sheriff Bill Gore's administration for having the highest number of jail deaths of any major California county, prompting a state audit and calls for reforms from elected officials. Newly elected Sheriff Kelly Martinez has implemented many reforms, including making Narcan widely available, which has saved lives of several inmates suffering drug overdoses. Yet, several deaths have occurred since she took office early this year. The Sheriff's Department issued a statement expressing sympathy to the Adamson family and providing a family liaison officer to support them. The Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board was notified of this incident and responded to the scene, and the Sheriff's Homicide Unit is investigating under protocol for all in-custody deaths. The cause and manner of death will be determined by the Medical Examiner's Office. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Civil rights groups are forging connections to fight the rising tide of hate crimes. In a briefing from the Act Against Hate Alliance on Wednesday, civil rights leaders explained efforts to enlist regular people, advocacy groups, governments, and corporations in the fight against hate. Laura E. Ellsworth with the law firm Jones Day organizes the annual Eradicate Hate Global Summit in Pittsburgh, the site of the 2018 massacre at the Tree of Life Synagogue.
Whether it be against LGBT people or immigrants in El Paso or Jews again in Poway or Sikhs in Oak Creek or Asians throughout California, again and again and again, we saw this identity-based violence.
5 months ago, California was scarred by a mass shooting that killed 11 Asian Americans during the Lunar New Year celebration at two dance halls in Monterey Park. A year ago, a white supremacist gunman targeted black shoppers, killing 10 at a supermarket in Buffalo, New York. Recently, Governor Gavin Newsom announced two new ways to report hate speech and hate crimes by logging on to the website caversushate.org or calling 833-8-NO-HATE. Tomas Barracks with the International Network Against Cyber Hate in the Netherlands says his organization responds to complaints of online hate speech and manages a database to monitor trends in cyber hate.
Hate speech is not always followed by hate crime, but hate crimes are very, very often or almost always preceded by hate speech.
May is Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. Dennis Santiago is CEO of the National Diversity Coalition based in Los Angeles. He says his organization tries to fight the myth of the Pacific Rim cultures as a monolith.
Each one of them has beachhead cultures in the United States, and every single one of them has very different characteristics in terms of their economic integration, their cultural isolation, even from each other.
The 2021 California Hate Crime Report found that hate crimes increased more than 32% in the Golden State between 2020 and 2021. Anti-Asian hate crime events increased dramatically, rising 177.5% during that time. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Santee United Methodist Church will be holding a Pride Walk on June 10th, supporting the LGBTQ+ community, diversity, and inclusion in Santee. The walk will start with a brief kickoff rally from 12:30 to 1 p.m. at the church on Magnolia Avenue, that's just north of Mission Gorge Road. A bipartisan slate of speakers will include Pastor Jaime Pangman, Santee Mayor John Minto, Helix Water Board Director Andrea Beth Damsky, Ryan Darcy, the Vice Chair of the San Diego Democratic Party East Area and lifelong Santee resident, and Lauren Casares, Communications Director with the East County Democratic Caucus, who is also a lifelong Santee resident. The walk will be from Magnolia and Mission Gorge west to Cuyamaca and back, covering about 2 miles. The public is invited to participate in the Santee Pride Walk. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Governor Gavin Newsom's new budget proposal, called the May Revise, is being met with relief from the higher education sector, which had feared big cuts. The higher ed budget is stable, despite a projected budget deficit of $35.1 billion. Nonetheless, Joshua Hagan with the Campaign for College Opportunity says the Revise fully funds promises made to the UC, CSU, and community college systems.
The May Revise of the budget keeps intact the higher education compacts for the UC and the CSU in the roadmap for California's future for the community colleges. That provides stable base funding increases to all three systems of public higher education in California.
By law, the core budget must be balanced and passed by June 15th, so lawmakers and interest groups will be busy hammering out a final package over the next few weeks. The governor's plan puts money toward a program that would require UCLA to set aside slots to guarantee admission for students transferring from a community college. Hagan says he'd like to see that expanded to all the UC campuses, similar to the existing associate degree for transfer pathway to the Cal State system.
What we would like to see is that if a student earns a 3.0 to earn system-wide access to the UC, that would guarantee access not to a specific campus, but say that we are going to have a spot for you within the UC system based on how you performed while you were in community college.
Lawmakers are also currently considering Assembly Bill 1749, which would require the UC schools to develop a guaranteed system-wide community college transfer pathway. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
Local residents John and Martha King have been inducted into Women in Aviation International's Pioneer Hall of Fame. John King was the only man among 100 trailblazing women who have made their marks in aviation history, including such famous predecessors for the award as Amelia Earhart, Anne Morrow Lindbergh, and astronaut Sally Ride. The names of John and Martha King are familiar to virtually all U.S. pilots. The business they created, King Schools, began in the 1970s as a traveling ground school for aspiring private pilots. Since then, it has blossomed into the world's most prolific supplier of print, video, and computer-based instructional materials, covering every aspect of training and safety. More than half of the pilots in the U.S. have used one or more of their courses. The Kings have also campaigned for an active approach to aviation safety. John and Martha King are La Jolla residents, but they're well known in East County. They regularly fly in and out of Gillespie Field in El Cajon, where they maintain their Falcon 10 jet. Martha was honored by the East County Chamber of Commerce at its 2017 Women in Leadership Luncheon. The Women in Aviation International Awards in May hailed Martha King as the Renaissance Woman of Aviation and the only woman to hold every class of pilot and instructor rating. Marcy Veroni, a board chair of Women in Aviation International, nominated Martha and John for the Women in Aviation International Award. She praised the couple as champions of aviation safety who lead by example. Founded in 1990, Women in Aviation International supports women in aviation through education, networking, and scholarship programs, including a scholarship in partnership with King Schools. Martha King had this to say regarding women in aviation. "We still have a long way to go, but the day when airline passengers would be shocked to hear a female voice from the cockpit are thankfully behind us. I feel deeply honored to have been selected by WAI as a pioneer." And she added, "I'm sure John is equally honored, since the company is so good, to have been made an honorary woman." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, my very special guest is Lillian Serrano, director of the Southern Border Communities Coalition, which is part of AllianceSanDiego.org. And we're going to be speaking about some very troubling circumstances out in Jacumba, where a number of migrants turned up over the weekend or several days ago. And it raises some very serious questions about their treatment by Border Patrol. Lillian, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Tell us about when you first became aware that there were migrants in Jacumba. And I will add that our reporter, Rebecca Persons, notified us of this, and I believe we were the first media outlet to get a story out about the plight of these people massing at the border, coming into the Jacumba area, which is a high desert town with basically absolutely no resources to help them. The people, the good townspeople of Jacumba, were gathering together and, you know, buying them water and food in the initial days, helping them, you know, make cell phone calls and so forth before the Border Patrol started, you know, rounding people up. But when did you become aware that this was an issue? How did you find out about it?
Yes. Well, I mean, by the time we found out about Jacumba sites, we had already heard of and had been keeping a close eye in a couple sites in the San Isidro area, in which for a few months we were receiving reports of migrants almost just wandering around in the corridor between the two border walls, you know, waiting for Border Patrol to process them. We started documenting how processing times went from a few hours to overnight and then eventually days. And the number of migrants went from just a handful to eventually being the hundreds. So because similar situations had occurred in the past, just a couple years ago in Del Rio in Texas, we had a very similar situation in which migrants are coming in into the country and they are already on U.S. soil, have to wait for long periods of time by Border Patrol to come in, pick them up and process them. We were very alert or, you know, trying to hear what was happening in other sites. And then we started receiving the reports of Jacumba, that how at least three different sites were, or two different camps were formed, once again, on U.S. soil, serving as outdoor detention facilities or pre-screening detention facilities for Border Patrol. We started hearing from partners out there and, you know, just organizations that took their time to go out to the area to see with their own eyes and witness what was happening, how there were families, there were children, elders, right? Like a mix of folks waiting outdoors for days without access to food, to water. Once again, just waiting for Border Patrol to come pick them up.
Yeah, this was shocking. And this all comes against the backdrop of Title 42 ended, which was the Trump era public health policy during COVID that basically said they could force people to wait in Mexico because of the public health crisis, the fear of spreading COVID. That's ended as of a few days ago. And of course, it's been all over the news for weeks. They were expecting a rush of migrants, or I should say asylum seekers. In this case, all of them, I understand, were trying to request asylum here, meaning it's too dangerous for them to go back to their homelands, or so people claimed. But at any rate, it seems to me there's no excuse for Border Patrol not to have been prepared at some level. Everyone, if you were reading the newspapers, knew this was going to happen. Instead, the report, the very troubling report that's just come out, titled Lives in Danger, Seeking Asylum Against the Backdrop of Increased Border Enforcement. This came out May 16th. That's yesterday as we're recording this interview. On the 17th. And the findings are truly shocking. And they do confirm pretty much what our reporter found when she was out there as well. This was put out by, I believe it was Alliance San Diego and the Southern Border Communities Coalition. And some of the findings were of the migrants that you interviewed. 100% believe they would be detained, although Border Patrol claims they weren't, and that they would be arrested or die in the desert if they left. 100% said border agents were not giving them enough food, and 53% said they were not giving them enough water for the day. Some of these people apparently were there for 3 days, 5 days, and were not provided a single bite of food by the Border Patrol. It's unconscionable. 100% said Border Patrol agents were not providing adequate sanitation, such as toilets, maybe one porta potty for hundreds of people, and 47% said they were not adequate trash cans or waste removal. 100% said agents were not providing adequate shelter, such as protection from the sun or even blankets to keep warm at night. How on earth can this be happening? Well, tell us about what your agency is doing, your organization is doing to try to change this situation and get help for folks like this.
Yes. I would just like to clarify for your followers that this wasn't hundreds of people approaching the border at the same time, right? These were groups of migrants, families or just small groups that started arriving well before Title 42 was lifted. And even after Title 42 was lifted, that were just, once again, arriving in small groups and started congregating. A lot of times we saw Border Patrol themselves directing people where to wait, right? Basically directing them to these outdoor encampments that form. Mm-hmm. And once people arrive, we knew that Border Patrol wasn't allowing them to leave, right? Because Border Patrol was blocking the roads in and out. We had volunteers interact with Border Patrol agents and ask if they, if people were not detained, can we start transporting them out of here? And the answer was very clear that no. Our volunteers were not able to transport people.
So it seems like they're being very disingenuous here. They're telling people this isn't a detention, and yet clearly they were detaining people and telling people they couldn't leave or help them to leave. And it seems to me maybe this is because once they're considered detained, there is a requirement under U.S. law that they provide them basic things like food and water and shelter. And so, it's not being done. And I will say, I called all over the place yesterday trying to draw attention, trying to get someone to listen. I called Senator Alex Padilla's office. All you can get is a voicemail. There's nothing on the site about how to reach, press people or a chief of staff. I called, it's Daryl Issa's district, although I wasn't able to reach anyone there. I tried calling Juan Vargas, who I know cares about, Congressman Vargas, who I know cares about issues, and he's been fighting for it, the rights of people in the San Ysidro area. But the answer was basically, Hakumba is not my district, So it seems to be really difficult to get any accountability. I also reached out to the person in charge of media for the Southwest region of the Border Patrol. They have not gotten back to me. There seems to be just no accountability for any of this, which is extremely disturbing. Now, I understand that despite all this, even being able to put in a request for asylum sounds like it wasn't being honored. Tell me what you found out about that.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. We haven't heard from authorities on why was the situation allowed to escalate to the amount that it did. It was a clear violation of our own policies and even international treaties. Actually, the only office that was very responsive to the situation was the office of State Senator Steve Padilla, who actually accompanied us multiple times out there and, you know, was following very close. But as I understand, not even they were receiving information from the authorities. As the Southern Border Communities Coalition, we did file an administrative claim, against the situation, raising alarms. I know that as soon as we heard about the encampments being formed, this outdoor detention centers being formed, we alerted the authorities, and they were well aware of the situation for days before they acted into moving people, transporting people out.
Now, and this was Homeland Security, to be clear, that which oversees the border patrol that you filed the administrative claim with. And then I understand that if they continue to ignore this and do not do anything to resolve the situation, that possibly a legal filing in court could be the next step.
Yes, so there is oversight by Congress, actually, to the administration, and that is the path that we're taking. We won, and we filed already, like you mentioned, a claim with the agency in charge of providing oversight for the whole Department of Homeland Security, specifically for CBP, which is the umbrella agency for Border Patrol. Our hope is that we can find out why were there outdoor pre-screening detention places mm-hmm. in our area? What was the reasoning behind that? And why were agents in full clear violation of their own policy? Mm-hmm. But more importantly, what can we do to stop this from ever happening again? Because once again, regardless of your situation, whether you're detained or not, whether you're coming in seeking asylum or just a migrant or just any person in our country.
Yeah, even if they're subject.
Basic standards that we need to meet. And we cannot allow for another child to go hungry in front of a federal agent and have the federal agent have zero response and then claim no responsibility when they're not allowing them to leave.
Yeah, and let's be clear. According to this report, a third of these people coming in had children with them. A third of them. So we're talking about literally starving children here. 44% of them were women. They were from all around the world. Your report mentioned Colombia, India, Peru. I know I had people tell me they talked to folks from many, many other countries, from Haiti, from some were from Mexico, some from, I believe there was one from Turkey. There was somebody from Afghanistan. So it was really all over the globe. The report also mentioned that although 100% of them said they wanted asylum, only two of them were even able to mention that to a Border Patrol agent. None of them really got to sit down for an interview. We don't know whether that's going to happen or not. Now, there's been a policy change under the Biden administration where they are now saying people are supposed to apply through an app rather than just come across the border. And the idea was, I think, to prevent people from massing on the border in these dangerous camps in Mexico, that if you can apply through the app first, that it might be safer for folks. I mean, that's could be a good thing. The problem, though, is that it really isn't working, apparently. First of all, the app is only available in three languages. If you don't speak those three languages, how do you do this? How do you do it? Many of the migrants had technology issues. You know, the thing would crash all the time. They don't have, if they had internet access at all, which many of them don't. And I understand you have to have the most updated version of the app. So tell us about what the survey found when you asked people if they knew about the app or not and what their experiences were.
Yes. Yes, like you mentioned, there has been an attempt by the Biden administration to have folks utilize an app to book their appointment to come through the port of entry. And, you know, I also want to make it clear that even as advocates, we agree with the administration. The safest route for every asylum seeker is through a port of entry. But when our ports of entry don't have the capacity to intake the need, right, when we are only able to process folks in the hundreds when they have been or there are folks waiting for 3 years in the thousands, right? Folks take desperate measures or desperate decisions. So that's what we have seen. Also, our own law and our international commitments say that regardless of how the person enter our country, if they're on U.S. soil, they and if they want to start a claim on a death as basis or a seek asylum, they should be allowed to. That is a different issue with the new policy. But what we are seeing also is that a lot of folks just don't know about it, right? When I remember being out there, you know, just talking to migrants who were waiting once again in the San Ysidro area, but very similar to what my colleagues report in Hakumba, and is that we were asking them that, were you aware of the lifting of Title 42? Most of them don't follow our politics. They don't know.
Yeah, like 80% said
Title 42, right?
80% said they didn't know. And of the 20% that did, they weren't able to use it because it would crash all the time, or they didn't have access to the internet. And I talked to someone yesterday who told me there were also issues where, even if you knew about it, even if you had the technology, even if you managed to get in and apply, each person in the family had to apply. And then it goes to trying to get the appointment. And there's been people who gave up because maybe one child they couldn't get an appointment for. So it just sounds like it's a mess. It makes you wonder, why don't they just do the obvious? If they want people to use the app, why don't they have an office at the border that people can go into where they have folks that can assist them, who speak multiple languages, or, you know, we've got technology just like the hospitals do. You can, you know, dial in a translator to help them go through the process, let families all apply together. I mean, these are solvable problems, but they just don't seem to be trying very hard right now to come up with solutions. I mean, what are we supposed to should make of that?
Yes, I mean, I know that there has been so many different versions of the CBP One app at this point that it's hard to keep track of which bug they fixed this time around. But I mean, if we're having so many issues with the only way that we're allowing people to come in safely, then we should also be prepared that people will not be able, right? A lot of these folks just don't have the capacity to wait for long periods of time because their lives are in danger, or because, you know, they just don't have the resources to be awaiting on a different country, right?
Correct. That was driven home by the fact that some of the people here in Hakumba had serious medical problems. I understand there was a woman, an elderly woman, that had to be hospitalized, and it took volunteers like the whole day from early in the morning till at night to get her to a hospital. Someone else had I believe it was epileptic seizure. Others had leg injuries from crossing in rugged terrain. And even the basic medical needs were not being attended to from what we are being told.
Yeah, that is correct. We were seeing in the different sites multiple medical emergencies and Border Patrol agents not even screening for some of these situations. So once again, to the extent in which those folks that had to wait outdoor were impacted, I think it's about, we will see in the future, right? We know that we were told by authorities that everybody that was awaiting got already processed. They are either awaiting at a CBP facility to be, you know, to have their asylum claim started, and or they're well on their way to reunite with family or friends who are in the United States who are waiting for them. So we don't know to what extent people's health will be impacted. We still are waiting to what extent people waiting for long times, how that will impact their cases. Because once again, some of these folks arrived before the lifting of Title 42, mm-hmm. therefore should not be impacted by the change of policy, but they were processed after the lifting of Title 42. So we have a lot of questions about which policy will be used to determine or to evaluate their case, right? So like I said, I think this is a story that we are still following, our partners are closely following, because it should have never happened in the first place, but now that it did, we want to make sure that the government does the right thing and the right thing to do is to care for those that we left outdoors, that we let starve, that we, left in inhumane conditions. We stripped their dignity and their humanity away. So now it's time for us to restore that.
What can people do if there are folks listening to this on KNSJ or viewing the video that we'll put up of this interview on our website? What can they do if they're concerned about this situation?
I mean, we need real solutions. And to get real solutions, we really will need a whole of government approach. We need our local government as well as our states and our federal Congress and the administration to work together to bring forward real solutions. Migration is not new. Migration is a human phenomenon. There's people coming and leaving our country in a daily basis. And it's not just our country, right? It's every country in the world. We're all seeing people leave and people come. So yes, instead of us having or pushing for this closing borders rhetoric or this, how do we stop migration? The real question is, how do we manage migration? How do we screen people effectively, but always keeping their dignity and their humanity? And how do we make sure that we allow for flows of people to come in, but also, right, how do we treat people with dignity once they're already in the country? So I think those are the kind of conversations that, unfortunately, our elected officials are not having. So as citizens, right, it is our duty to ensure that our elected officials do their job.
So writing, calling your elected officials, especially the federal officials, is important. I would say also, if people wish to support nonprofit organizations that are trying to protect the rights of these immigrants, you can certainly go to alliancesd.org. If you want to learn more about what Alliance San Diego is doing, and certainly they're one of, you know, several organizations that are boots on the ground out there trying to make sure that the lives of these people are protected. And I should add that, you know, there's a great difference between open borders that, you know, that some people have concerns about and no security at all. You know, I guess the flip side of this is they did apprehend someone who was on the terrorist watch list from Afghanistan coming across the border just a few days ago. So I don't think anyone is advocating that they shouldn't screen these people, that we shouldn't know who is coming in or trying to come into the country. But surely we can do better than having people, whether they're going to be granted asylum or whether they're going to be deported for however long they're here, whether it's a day or a month or a year, not leaving people in open holding pens in the hot desert heat with no food, not enough water, you know, no blankets, no medical needs, subjecting even children to these harsh conditions. I would challenge anyone to say that that is an acceptable policy. I'm going to let you have the last word today. And for those of you who just tuned in, folks, we have been speaking with Lillian Serrano with the San Diego Alliance, one of the organizations that's been fighting to protect the rights and the lives, frankly, of asylum seekers coming across our border. Lillian, what else would you like our audience to know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you summarized it correctly. At this point, our conversations really should be, what kind of country do we want to be, right? And what kind of actions by our public servants do we want to see in our communities? And I think that the actions or the inactions of the Border Patrol agents this last few weeks in our community, whether it was Jacumba or San Isidro, were very clearly not representative of the values that we hold. And we want to make sure that we as community, right, as folks who know that no child should be hungry in our country, that regardless of what your path is or what your future awaits in our legal system, everybody should be treated with dignity and respect. I think that we should demand more, we should demand better, and actually we do have the policies that demand more from our public servants, and what we saw were violations of our own laws, but also, like I mentioned, international treaties. So let's start with dignity. Let's start having these conversations from a place where we respect everybody's humanity and let politics aside.
Great. Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
Concerts, comedy, a musical play, and a library fundraiser are all coming up in San Diego's inland region during late May and June. Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District invites you to an evening of musical celebration to bridge the gap between student success and equity, raising funds for students who are studying musical arts. Nationally renowned musical artists will join students from Grossmont and Cuyamaca Community Colleges and other local musicians at this inaugural event on Thursday, May 25th, from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Samuel M. Sicati Performing Arts Center at Cuyamaca College. The concert is organized by the Grossmont Cuyamaca Music Alliance. For tickets, you can visit eventbrite.com and search for the Grossmont Cuyamaca Music Alliance. The Julian Community Heritage Foundation will host its second annual Town Square Music Festival on June 3rd. This music fest will feature 7 live bands as well as food, local artisans, raffles, silent auctions, and more. All donations will benefit the continued development of the Julian Town Square in the heart of historic Julian. For more information, you can visit juliantownsquare.org. The Lemon Grove Lions Club invites you to its Salsa y Salsa Fiesta on Saturday, June 3rd from 6 to 9 p.m. The event will celebrate the Lion Club's 8th anniversary and raise funds for local service projects. The evening includes a no-host bar, raffles, silent auction, salsa contest, DJ, and a performance by the Fabulous Five Dancers SD Forever Lions Club. The event will be catered by Big Boss Taco Cart. If you're interested in entering the salsa contest, the highlight of the evening with a chance to prove you've got the best salsa, or you want to buy tickets, you can contact Joanne Burke at 619-469-7350. Friends of the Casa de Oro Library in Spring Valley are holding a benefit concert Sunday, June 4th at 7 p.m. in a private home. The featured entertainment will be Fred Benedetti and Robert Wetzel, an award-winning guitar duo. Light refreshments will be served. For tickets, you can email casalibraryfriends@gmail.com. Friends of the Casa de Oro Library is raising funds to build a new library for the community. The California Note Catchers, a women's 4-part harmony chorus, will present Sounds of Summer on Saturday, June 17th at 2 p.m. The concert will be held at the La Mesa First United Methodist Church on Palm Avenue. The chorus will be singing classic and traditional songs. Also featured will be community guest ensembles. For more information, you can visit californianotecatchers.com. SAPS at Sea, the San Diego chapter of Sons of the Desert, the Laurel and Hardy Appreciation Society, will present their June meeting, Stan and Ollie and Cop Drubbles, on June 17th at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Spring Valley. This month's guest cartoon is Droopy Dog in Northwest Hounded Police, followed by two guest comedians, Buster Keaton in The Goat and Joe McDoats in So You Think You're Not Guilty. After intermission, the SAPS will screen Laurel and Hardy's first feature, Pardon Us, as well as the short film, The Hooskow. Doors open at 6:30 with the show starting at 7. For more information, you can visit the SAPS at Sea on Facebook. The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce will host its The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce hosts its 14th annual Popular Foodie Fest, Taste of San Diego East, is set for the evening of Monday, June 26th at the newly renovated Town & Country Hotel in Mission Valley.
The popularity and crowd of this annual event has outgrown the La Mesa Community Center, where it was held for the first 10 years. Guests are invited to taste, savor, mingle in the ballroom, and visit with businesses there. Will be food samples, prizes, a silent auction, and raffles. For tickets and reservations, you can visit lamesachamber.net/taste. Visionary Youth Theater presents Grease, School Version, at the Visionary Performance Space on La Mesa Boulevard on June 30th through July 9th. The hit musical, with a hip-shaking rock and roll score, celebrates Rydell High's class of 59 in all their duck-tailed, bobby-sock, gum-snapping glory. The fun-loving spirit and immortal songs make Grease a favorite among rock and roll fans of all ages. For tickets, you can visit visionarydancetheater.org. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions from San Diego's East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
And next up, we have some national news headlines from Public News Service.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Partisan legislation just won't produce the result we need. I am hopeful that soon both sides will find an agreement that keeps default completely off the table.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer expressed some optimism Thursday about reaching a bipartisan agreement on the national debt limit and avoiding default. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy also expressed hope congressional leaders could reach a deal in time to hold a House vote as early as next week. Georgia Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene introduced articles of impeachment against President Joe Biden Thursday over his handling of the nation's border security.
Joe Biden has deliberately compromised our national security by refusing to enforce immigration laws and secure our border.
House Republicans don't currently have the votes to impeach Biden. Earlier this year, several Republicans announced articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, but there has been no movement. Michael Barr, vice chair of the Federal Reserve, said his review of Silicon Valley Bank's failure found the bank's management practices and inadequate regulatory supervision by the Fed to be at fault for the collapse. Barr says he plans to improve the speed, force, and agility of supervision.
Supervision should intensify at the right pace as a bank grows in size or complexity. Once identified, issues should be addressed more quickly, both by the bank and by supervisors.
Earlier this week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed several bills which target drag shows, restrict the use of personal pronouns in school, force the use of certain restrooms, and ban gender-affirming care for minors.
You have a movement amongst, I would say, rogue elements of the medical establishment to do things that is basically the mutilation of minors.
Meanwhile, the Walt Disney Company has canceled plans to build a $1 billion office complex in Orlando and bring thousands of jobs to the state over changing business conditions, a week after Disney CEO Bob Iger spared with DeSantis about the company's investment in Florida. Last year, DeSantis signed a bill taking away the company's right to self-govern its 40-square-mile property after former Disney CEO Bob Chapek criticized a state law banning conversations of sexual orientation and gender identity in schools. The Supreme Court sided with tech giants Thursday, protecting online platforms from two liability lawsuits over terrorist-related content on their sites. In oral arguments, Justice Elena Kagan said supporters of more stringent tech standards could end up opening the door for a world of lawsuits.
Anytime you have content, you also have these presentational and prioritization choices that can be subject to suit.
Finally, a new analysis from the Democratic data firm Catalyst examined how Democrats avoided an electoral wipeout in the 2022 midterms. According to the data, the party focused on cultivating voters under 30, winning 65% of them, up from 62% in 2020. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our HRUST indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. The San Diego County Medical Examiner has identified two homicide victims who were killed in unincorporated El Cajon on April 27th and found that gunshot wounds caused their deaths. 20-year-old Jaden Davis and 29-year-old Shondell Jones, both San Diego residents, were shot during a house party at an Airbnb on Renfro Way. Neither victim lived at the residence. Deputies responded to calls reporting multiple gunshots and found both victims inside, each suffering from multiple gunshot wounds.
After deputies rendered aid, Davis was airlifted to Sharp Memorial Hospital but died a short time later. Sanders was unresponsive and pronounced dead at the scene. The motive and circumstances of the shootings remain under investigation. Anybody with information is asked to call the homicide unit at 858-285-6330, or you can leave an anonymous tip by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Now that the rain is over, you may be ready for some hiking, biking, golfing, or yard work. But hold on before you head out and watch your step. You may be greeted with a surprise. Rattlesnakes are coming out. Rattlesnakes are found in most U.S. states, but California is blessed with more than its fair share. Rattlesnake season in California starts in April. At one point or another, depending where you live, you've probably encountered them. But if you take these safety tips and apply them, they won't come as a surprise. Rattlesnake calls and sightings are on the increase. Snakes come out of their hiding places and are looking for food, so there's plenty of reasons to be proactive and remind us and others that common sense about the common sense of snake safety. Practice these precautions. Be on the lookout when walking hillsides, especially if you're operating loud machinery that may make it difficult to hear the signature rattle. If you're wearing headphones, keep the music low and practice additional caution. Make your home less hospitable to snakes. Yard debris, wood piles, gaps under homes, wooden decks, cement patios, and open water sources can attract snakes. Remove brush piles and fill in gaps as much as you can. Watch for snakes around pools and ponds. Keep bushes and shrubs 6 inches or less off the ground. This will make the snake feel less secure when hiding, so it will be more likely to move along. Watch your feet and hands. If you can't see them, such as when you reach under a rock or step into a brush pile, the potential to be bitten increases. If you do encounter a snake, don't antagonize it. Give it space. That's the best approach. A snake will generally slither along on its own accord. If you are bitten by a rattlesnake, stay calm, but dial 911 and seek immediate help. Lie down and keep the affected limb lower than the heart. You can outrun a rattlesnake, but you can't outrun their strike. A rattlesnake strike is delivered at 1 foot per second, so back away slowly if you are within 4 to 5 feet of one. The average rattlesnake can move 2 to 3 miles an hour, while the average human can run 10 to 15 miles an hour, with the fastest humans clocked at up to 28 miles an hour. This information is thanks to Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, author of our Chief's Corner column on East County Magazine. And this is Miriam Raftery.
As Californians make their Memorial Day weekend and summer vacation plans, Cal Fire and federal fire agencies want to ensure that vacationers obtain necessary campfire permits and learn how to have a campfire safely. The California Wildfire Coordination Group, or CWCG, has unveiled a new fire prevention website, preventwildfireca.org, which for the first time offers an online campfire permit section. Cal Fire Director and Chief Ken Pilmlott says, "The new online system makes it easier for Californians to get a permit while still taking the time to learn how to have a campfire safely." He adds, "It is critical that a responsible adult be in attendance at your campfire at all times, and that it is completely extinguished before you leave to avoid sparking a wildfire. One less spark means one less wildfire." Fire officials from the CWCG, an interagency wildfire group comprised of local, state, and federal fire agencies, including Cal Fire, spent months creating the new system, which includes a short video and test prior to issuing the permit. While permits are still available at any Cal Fire, U.S. Forest Service, or BLM station or office, the online option is a quick and easy way to obtain a permit before beginning any trip in California. All a person needs is a computer with internet access and a printer. After watching a brief video on proper campfire techniques, the applicant will take a short quiz about the video and then receive their printable permit for free. Cal Fire reminds everyone that fire safety plays an important role outdoors, especially when it comes to campfires and outdoor cooking. Many unattended and improperly extinguished campfires have resulted in wildfires. With California in a severe drought and extremely dry conditions, not taking the time to ensure you have completely extinguished your campfire could result in a devastating wildfire. Campfires can also be extremely dangerous for children, so they should never be allowed to play around them or outdoor cooking appliances. Devastating burn injuries are all too common when these safety rules are not followed. Just a little forethought could protect you and your family. Here are some simple tips to ensure a safe campfire. Obtain a campfire permit and make sure there are not fire restrictions in the area. Use only approved and established campgrounds and campfire rings. Locate the campfire a safe distance away from tents, trees, or buildings. Clear the area around your campfire down to soil 5 feet from the fire's edge. Never let children use or play with lighter fluid or have them start a campfire. Completely extinguish campfires before leaving or going to bed. To obtain an online campfire permit or to learn more fire prevention tips on the One Less Spark, One Less Wildfire campaign, visit www.preventwildfireca.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
Cases of hepatitis A in San Diego County continue to grow, with 28 cases reported so far this year and 18 of those among people experiencing homelessness. The county typically reports about 2 cases of the virus each month, with only 1 case reported in the homeless population last year. This current increase in Hep A cases is a form of person-to-person transmission, not food. The county is taking steps to prevent further spread of the disease. Since February, over 4,500 vaccinations have been administered to people at risk, with more vaccination events planned. Medical emergency departments are also being asked to vaccinate those at risk and screen them for Hep A infections. Hepatitis A vaccination schedule generally is a 2-dose series. The first dose of the vaccine is considered to be about 95% effective. But this protection will eventually decrease, so a second shot is recommended at 6 months to 18 months later, and that will provide immunity for between 20 and 40 years, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, says we're expanding ongoing efforts to reach the homeless community because this is a setting where cases could spread more quickly. She urges cities and organizations to help with this response. Homeless individuals are more vulnerable to getting sick from the virus because of its ability to spread in areas without convenient access to bathrooms and hand washing. So hygiene kits and information are being distributed at homeless camps. The county has asked all cities in San Diego to provide housing and/or more frequent cleaning, hand washing stations, and portable restrooms for the homeless. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. What KNSJ offers is unique and more important than ever as disinformation is rampant in our society. Journalists losing jobs at media outlets, reducing their departments for investigative reporting has also hindered news available to the public. KNSJ is proud to announce the opening of a brand new studio. And you're invited to an open house on Saturday, May 20th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The studio is located at 4161 Home Avenue in the City Heights region of San Diego within the Employee Rights Center. We're building a new multimedia broadcast studio for community information, education, and participation. So please come on out and join us for live broadcasting, listener calls, refreshments, and of course, networking for social justice. Come celebrate this new multimedia community resource. And again, that address is 4161 Home Avenue in San Diego, this Saturday, May 20th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. We hope to see you there. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.